Hello, everybody. I'm Johnny Calloway, and welcome to Says Who for the Addictive Personality. I am author of Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge Where Souls Connect. And I'm here with my co-host, Aura Nadrich.
Hi, everybody. I am Aura, and I'm so happy to be here with you. I am a certified life coach, certified mindfulness meditation teacher, and the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever, and the creator of the Says Who method for transforming negative and fear-based thoughts. And that's what we're going to help you do. We are going to help you transform those thoughts that get in the way of you creating the life that you want and deserve.
And on the show, we're going to be talking about the 12 steps, A Course in Miracles, and Aura Says Who method. The main thing we're going to talk about and how all three of those things work together is the power of thought and how your thought runs your life. It creates your life.
We are going to take these 7 questions that I've created so that you can find out if your thoughts are real or if they're not, and if they're serving your well-being or if they're not. And by you sending us in your questions, we're going to be able to work with you directly so that we can help you use the Says Who method to change those thoughts out to make your life work.
Let's do it, Aura. Hello, everybody. I'm Johnny Calloway. This is Says Who for the Addictive Personality. I'm here with my friend Aura Nadrich, author of Says Who. And we're going to talk today about how guilt and shame, how we can use the Says Who process to work with guilt and shame, and how we can change our minds about what we feel guilty about and what we feel shame about. Aura?
Hi there, Johnny. So good to be with you today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. And yeah, guilt and shame, those are big ones, right?
Yeah.
Those are two words that follow us around like a bad penny. And it's the thoughts around those words that are most charged. So the Says Who method is really good for helping you dispel the energy that you have on things like guilt and shame. It's the thoughts around those that we need to look at. And we're going to do that today.
So how about if we do this, Aura? How about if, for a time here, you are my life coach, since that's what you do. And I've just come to your office and you ask me what's going on. And I'm like, well, I feel so guilty. And where would you go from there?
Yeah, you know what I say, Johnny, with the Says Who method, which, you know, are 7 very straightforward questions to ask yourself about any negative or fear-based thought you have that's really running the show in your head, right? And so what I tell people is you want to bring those thoughts up. You want to bring those troubling thoughts up and not push them away, not deny them, not to pretend that you're not having them. But on the contrary, you want to really take a close look, like a magnifying glass, so that you could look at that thought that could be around guilt or shame that's really weighing heavily on you, that's really making you feel pretty lousy about yourself. So I would say, Johnny, what's that thought? What's that negative thought that is really weighing heavily on you, that just either won't let you go, is pulling you around like you're some kind of dog on a leash, and it just won't let up? You know, there's that thought. So what is it for you?
It's funny that you would use the dog on a leash, Aura, because what I would feel guilty about, what I felt guilty about for a long time, is I was afraid to have a dog because I felt like it was my fault my dog died. So I have always carried guilt for that. And because of that guilt and that feeling of responsibility, I have refused to let myself have another dog.
Okay, what I want to say about that is that so much of what we tell ourselves started in childhood. So much of what we carry around that really burdens us or weighs heavy on our heart, we started long ago in childhood. So that thought or that belief, because, you know, thoughts turn into emotions, turn into belief, turn into a reality. And your reality is my thought, I killed my dog. And the reality is I'm not going to let myself have a dog. You know, you got to connect the dots.
Right.
I'm not worthy of having a dog because I killed my dog. So therefore, I can't have another dog. It's the connect the dots. And that thought happened. How old were you when you felt that? How old were you?
About 7.
Okay, so 7 years old, and I'm not talking to a 7 year old man. I'm on this show with a grown man, and we're all these adults now. And what we find out about ourselves is that we're carrying some real childhood hurts and pains and trauma with us into our adulthood, into the moment of now. And what we need to do is we need to really begin to change out that thought and the story around that thought, which is, I killed my dog, I can't have a dog, to, I didn't kill my dog, I'm not responsible for my dog dying. And let's just say, even if I were responsible for my dog dying, that doesn't make me unworthy or incapable of having another dog.
And in our pre-show, I'm going to bring something up that we talked about before we actually started the show, and that's connectedness. Now, what I have refused myself as a result of that thought that I've let run my life is connectedness with a pet, connectedness with another loving, living being. I have denied myself that. And I know before my dog died, that was the light of my life. I love that dog with everything. I mean, it brought pure joy to my heart. And when the dog died, which I had nothing to do with in reality, I stopped that. I stopped letting myself have that. And as we talked about, the connectedness is all huge in that. So I'm hoping that what we can do here is help people, in using your Says Who method, help people discover where they disconnected and how they keep themselves from connected by their own thoughts.
Absolutely. Because, you know, just to use the dog analogy, which is your reality, you actually experience that. And that if we can really identify the thought, you know, because again, the thought is creating the emotion. And what you just said was, okay, well, the dog made me so happy, but it was my belief, again, the operative word being the belief, that I killed my dog, that doesn't allow me the joy that I'm entitled to feel of having that dog and what that dog made me feel like. It made me feel happy. And how we take these negative thoughts that have turned into our beliefs, and they completely overshadow the good in something, meaning that dog made you happy. And what you want to return to is telling yourself thoughts that support the feeling of feeling good, and be able to tell yourself thoughts like, I deserve to have another dog. I did not kill my dog. My dog made me happy. My dog brought me joy. I love that dog. And I am worthy to have another dog so that I can feel happiness again. That is doing what I call in the book, release and replace. It's releasing a thought that has weighed so heavily on us, be it, I killed my dog, and replacing it with it, I did not kill my dog, and I deserve to have another dog because that dog made me happy, and I deserve to feel happy again.
Right. And what you were just saying, another piece of all that puzzle that comes together for me is that one of the thoughts that needs to be uncovered, because we hide them, we don't know we're operating from them, is that I'm just going to lose it anyway. It'll just die on me. It won't stay. So unveiling all of those lies, those are lies. Unveiling those and finding the truth is love doesn't have to leave. Love doesn't have to go, whether it's a dog or another human being. It's not a given that it's going to go away. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I mean, like if we're going to talk about dogs, I lost my dog, what I call my soul dog, Leo, Leonardo. Leonardo, Leo, passed away last year, and I was heartbroken. I mean, you know, anybody who's lost a loved one, be it a human being or an animal, it breaks your heart. And I love that dog so much, and I went into grieving, and I was really sad about losing Leo. And you know what I realized about myself? I have a lot more love to give. My love didn't end with just loving Leo. You know, people have, sometimes when you lose an animal, and I think it's very personal for everybody, some people get a dog while their dog is old, so that when the dog dies, they're maybe a little bit less heartbroken because they got the other puppy that's right there. You know, it's personal. I don't think we should judge anybody for how they not want to replace what they loved or who they loved. It's recognizing that, hey, you know what? I have so much more love to give, and I have so much more love to receive. That was an aha moment for me, because I did end up getting two other dogs.
I did a podcast with Dr. Michael Rice a little while back, and he talked about, which ties right into what we're talking about, or it's so perfect. He talked about how love is really a noun, not a verb. It's not something we do, it's something we are. And right. He used the analogy, which I thought was so cool. He said, if somebody hands you an infant, and you feel all this joy inside, is it because that baby's loving you? No, that baby just brought up the love that's already in you.
Exactly.
So
it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
And my cat, now I don't have a dog, but I have a cat, and she brings up the love in me every time she jumps in my lap. So, but
okay,
she loves
Johnny, it. We're going to do a whole show on how much we love our animals. This is going to be our addiction to our animals.
So my cat doesn't jump in my lap and go to rubbing my head or petting on me. She just jumps in my lap and she brings up the joy in me. So what I want to do is try to rein us into, like, how do we use this method? What are the questions we ask ourselves to get to that?
Yes. Okay. So this is where we replace those thoughts that have turned into our beliefs that really limit us. They really sabotage us. They really undermine us. They don't allow for us to continue to feel the love. To use that as a perfect example. I love the dog story because that is such a rich story in explaining how our thoughts really hold us back from experiencing the very thing that we really not only want to experience, but we deserve to experience. So with the Says Who method, you know, I would, if we were to go down the 7 questions and you said to me, hey, and I said, okay, Johnny, what's the thought? Give me the thought that's really, really troubling you. And you would say, I killed my dog, so I don't deserve to have another one. Now, that's such a says who. Because I would say, well, first question, says who? Who is saying that thought in your head? Well, clearly it's you. But it could be also that maybe someone said that to you. Maybe a parent said to you when the dog died. Let's just say, because we do know that there are children. I happen to know somebody whose kid opened the front door and the dog ran out and they all saw the dog be run over by a car. So what's that kid going to feel? Like, okay, well, they killed the dog. So you could have a thought that was said to you by somebody. As a child, if a dog died, somebody could say, you killed the dog, you're responsible, you're never going to have another animal again. Now, whether that's somebody saying that to us or we've told ourselves that, in your case, that's something I'm assuming you told yourself, right? That you're
yes.
not able to have another dog because you killed your dog?
Yes. Yeah, maybe.
So,
yeah.
Right. So how long have you been carrying around that belief?
Well, I actually worked on that years ago, but I carried it around for probably 30 years before I worked on it, before I realized that that was an unnecessary guilt that I was carrying.
Right. And there is the guilt. There is the guilt in how many things we deprive ourselves of, like a dog, which we can love and it can love us, be out of guilt and out of deserving and out of worthiness or the lack of feeling worthy. So that question, says who is saying that thought in your mind? Who is telling you that? That's a very important first question, the Says Who method, because what that does is it lets you really own the thought and belief in that thought that you're telling yourself. So it's a very big step to come forward and say, I am telling myself that I don't deserve a dog.
So I'm being clear with the listener. What we're talking about right now is the thought that manifests in guilt. That is the feeling. And then the feeling manifests the belief system that I don't deserve, yada, yada, yada. And then the action is I deprive myself.
Exactly.
Is that the dot? Is that connecting the dots? We go from
absolutely.
The... We go from the thought to the emotion to the belief to the action.
And the action is the same thing as reality. This is the action of my thought, which has produced the situation, which in fact is my reality. I don't have a dog. The reality is, we're using this hypothetically, but very applicable to a lot of people's lives. And because I tell myself this, this is how it is. This is the cause that created this reality that now I don't have a dog.
Right. So I have said for years, I've said this. It's almost like a mathematical equation. A thought creates a feeling, creates a belief, creates an action. If you can change the thought, you literally can change your life because it has that ripple effect. If you change the thought, you change the feeling, you change the belief, you change the way you act, you change your behavior. Right. That changes your life.
Absolutely, Johnny. And, you know, I always try to listen to the possible viewer out there who's saying, oh, you know, that all sounds really good, but I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do that. I don't know how I'm going to change my thought so that I can create a different cause and a different action. I don't know, you know, because they haven't put it into motion enough to see the results of that a thought causes an action, which causes a reality. So, they're very connected to their reality. They haven't put it into motion. They haven't really done it to know what that feels like. And that suddenly when you change out that belief, you are changing the action, changing the reality.
Right. So I want to tie a couple of 12-step things and a couple of Course in Miracles things into this just to show people that this isn't just a bunch of hula crap. It works. It's real. In the 12 steps, there are two different steps, steps 4 and steps 10, where they talk about inventory taking. Now, typically when we take our inventory, we are taking our inventory about our action. Okay, so we are dealing with the effect, not with the cause.
Exactly.
Okay, so what this method of yours does is it takes you beyond just, okay, this is what I feel guilty about. Okay, so I'm gonna look at that, I'm gonna own it. And so what your process does though is it says, okay, that's what happened, that's what I did, that was the effect. Now we're gonna look at the cause, which is the thought that drove that.
Right.
So we're going to a deeper level with the healing process.
Absolutely. Yes.
And that's where the healing occurs, is in the mind. Now I'm going to tie in A Course in Miracles to this because they all are so interconnected with their power of healing. I get excited. You've talked with me before. I get excited. I'm in that place right now because this is great.
Go, Johnny, go.
A Course in Miracles is riddled with the power of thought. It talks repeatedly about one of the things in the very beginning that it says is you are much too tolerant of mind wandering and are passively condoning your mind's miscreations. So when I am allowing myself to feel guilt, I am creating that belief system. If I am watching my mind, if I am watching my thoughts, and I'm like, whoa. I don't need to feel guilty here. I didn't do anything. And even if I did do something, there was this really wise guy that walked this planet at one time that said, forgive them, God, they know not what they do. We don't know what we do. And we don't know why and we don't know how until we investigate our thoughts. I love the word investigate. Until we investigate the thoughts and what's driving them, we don't understand why we do what we do.
Right. That's why I say in Says Who, you have to be able to do the inquiry and or investigation. We have to be able to question and challenge the very things that we believe, the very things that we're telling ourselves. I say in Says Who, you know, if somebody came along and wanted to step, you know, trespass onto your property, and you wouldn't say, oh, hey, come on in, help yourself to whatever you want. You'd say, you don't belong here. Get off my property. And yet, we let thoughts come into our mind that want to beat the you-know-what out of us. And we're like, yeah, okay, come on. Keep going. Yeah. Come back for more. You can keep. We don't challenge the very thoughts that we are readily accepting. Who says? Says who? How come you don't challenge the very thoughts that are telling you you can't have a dog? You're unworthy. You did this. You did that. You're a horrible person. You're not lovable. And all the negative, berating self-talk that we tell ourselves. Why aren't we challenging the very things that we are giving our power over to? And that is the investigation, and that is dealing head on, as you described, Johnny, the cause. That thought is the cause for everything that you feel thereafter.
You know, when I first got into 12-step recovery, one of the first tools they give you about not picking up the next drug is think it through. Okay, if I go to the bar to have a beer, am I really going to be able to have a beer? Have I ever had a beer? No, I buy them a 12-pack at a time for a reason. So, and I never thought about if I have that beer and I drive home drunk, might I hit somebody while I'm driving? Might I have an accident? Never thought about any of that. I've always said, after they told me that early on, this is like 30-some years ago, I've always said, I never thought anything through. I had thoughts that were immediately followed by events. I never thought about consequences of anything. I never thought about where's this going to take me. I started learning through that one question, through thinking it through, I started learning how to think. I didn't know how to think. I thought and did. I thought and did. And in my podcast with Dr. Eric Gentry, he talks about how the traumatized person, there's a space between event and action. The traumatized person doesn't have that space because they've been robbed of hope and they live in a very fear-based world. They have an event, something will happen, and they fight or flight immediately because they're scared. They're operating from fear. Right. Through my hope of using all the tools I've learned and adding your method to it, my hope is that we can help people create that space where they can have a thought process, an actual real thought process between an action and their reaction to it.
Absolutely, Johnny. You know, I have people say to me, because my method is a questioning method. It is the investigation. It is the inquiry. It is the challenge of that thought that is causing you so much unhappiness. And people will say to me, you know, Aura, I never even thought to question my thinking mind before. It never, you know, they look at me like a deer in headlights when I start to ask them questions about the thought that they are feel like a prisoner to. And I start to ask them questions and I say, does that thought make you feel better? And they'll be like, it's like I'm talking to them from another planet because they have never thought to question a thought that's making them unhappy. And it turns everything around in their head. Do you know? We will question things, but we won't question what? The very things we tell ourselves?
Right, right. God, I love this. The thing that I run into a lot, I facilitate Course in Miracles classes, and I talk about it all the time, as you well know. And the thing that I run into all the time is people operating from their belief system about their God, their higher power. And they'll say something to me about what they believe, and I will say to them, have you ever really thought about that? Does that really even make sense? You just told me you have an unconditionally loving God, and now then you're telling me this, whatever this is. Now, does that sound like unconditional love to you?
Right.
And they're like, well, that's just what I've always believed. And then I'm like, well, how well has it worked for you?
Right.
How closely connected do you feel with that source, as long as you're afraid that it's going to get you if you mess up?
Right. But you know, Johnny, these are very logical approaches to the thinking mind. I say about Says Who, they are seven very logical questions. They're simple, they're direct, and they're straightforward. If I say to somebody who's got a thought that's driving them crazy and they're beating themselves up so badly, and if I say just one of the Says Who questions, and I had a woman that was with me and she was on what I call the hamster wheel. Or the yeah buts, yeah but, yeah but. You know, you're on that. You know, she was on a jag about a negative thought that she was really on a loop with, you know. And I said, let me ask you something. And I said, do you like that thought? And again, you know, I get these responses like it short circuits something in their head. She looks at me like a deer in headlights and it stops. By the way, it stops. And that's what's so great about the Says Who method. It stops the negative hamster wheel spiral that you're looping in because you suddenly enter in a logical question and it literally renders people like, whoa, what just happened? And I said, do you like that thought? And she stopped and she went, no, no, I don't like that thought. As a matter of fact, I hate that thought. I said, okay, so I just want you to be with this for a minute. So not only do you not like the thought that you're telling yourself, but you're actually telling me you hate it. So why are you allowing it to take up so much time and energy in your head? It's like having a guest in your home that you can't stand and you can't wait for them to leave.
Done that.
You know, and yes, and we've done that with our thoughts too. We don't ask them to leave. We just let them stick around and just like, you know, lay in the pool of our head, like they, you know, like they're floating on a raft, and we just completely pamper that thought and just let them keep beating us up more and beating us more and beating up more. And we just keep feeding into them by allowing it to stay there. It doesn't make sense. No. It's illogical. It doesn't make sense, Johnny.
No, and the fear of questioning what we've always believed, regardless of what it is, there's a fear of questioning it. Now, when I tie that into what I believe spiritually, it's like an ego-driven thing. If you, the ego says, if you question that, you might find the truth. And the truth is, it's crazy. It's insane for you to keep believing that. It's insane for you to keep doing that as a result of that belief. It's insane. So I don't want you to question it. So we can't, that's a room that we can't go in. So
right.
What we're doing here is we're saying, you can go in that room. There's nothing in there. There's nothing in there but light and joy.
You so, got to go into that room. You
go in the room.
You got to go into the room. If you don't go into the room, it's like, you know, there's that wonderful children's story, Monster in the Closet. You know, this little boy is in bed and he's got his covers up like this and he's convinced that there's a monster in his closet. And it's a great illustrated book. It's really darling. And one night he's in bed and that's it. He's had it with the monster in his closet. And he takes out his toy rifle and he points it at the monster. And the monster freaks out. And he completely scares the monster. And the monster comes tiptoeing over and he crawls into the bed with the boy. Because he took charge over the very thing that he was afraid of, that he felt had power over him, only to find that the monster was way more scared than he is.
Right, right. And one of my, I've got these greeting cards that I did, and on one of my greeting cards, it says, you must face the dragon to become the butterfly. And
right.
To tie that into what we're talking about, you got to go in that room and see that that thing is not real. That thing right. That you, that fear that you've let run your entire life, that's in that room, that you can only go in. And the key to that door to get into that room is your questions.
That's right.
That's the key to the door. It's
right.
Like, is this real? You know, I recently read something, trying to get ready for our shows. I recently read something in A Course in Miracles where it talks about therapy, psychotherapy. And it says the purpose of the therapist, get this, you're going to love this. The purpose of the therapist is to get the patient to ask the question. That's it. That's it. That's the therapist is only there to open the door. So you will say, really?
Right.
It's that simple. Really? I've been letting and see the story, the insanity of me and the dog, to get back to the dog thing, was the reason I felt responsible for my dog's life was I went to school and didn't take her with me. And she got ran over while I was at school. Now, how insane is that to hold on to that your whole life? I can't have a dog because I didn't take my dog to school. I couldn't take my dog to school with me. They would never let me do that. But to that child, had I loved my dog enough, I would have taken her to school with me and she wouldn't have gotten run over. And
right.
I denied myself another dog for many, many, many years because of a lie.
A lie. Absolutely. A lie. And that's right. And that was the whole inspiration for my book, Says Who, in that, you know, my story. And that was that I told myself something many, many years ago when I had a sister who had a severe nervous breakdown. I told myself that it was going to happen to me. And that was a lie born out of fear.
Right.
And that thought ran the show of my life for a very long time until I realized I needed help. and only to come face to face with what I call the boogeyman thought.
Right.
The boogeyman thought that's had so much power over us until we are face to face, like that boy is face to face with the monster in his closet. And then you realize, hey, you know what? Your fear, your boogeyman, whatever it is that has had so much control over you, I killed my dog, whatever that is, that big fear, that big lie has had control over you for so long, and now it can stop.
Right.
And are you ready? Are you ready to give up the lie?
And to tag on to that, are you ready to give up the lie? Are you ready to step into the freedom that comes up as a result of facing that lie down? Because on the other side of that, on the other side of that question is our freedom, is our personal freedom, because all of those lies keep us chained, keep us imprisoned. I can't have a dog because of the lie.
Right.
So that's a certain type of prison. The things that I won't allow myself, the things I say I don't deserve, all of those are imprisoning. So the other side of the prison is the freedom.
That's right. And you know what, Johnny, with all due respect to people that have been in prison for a long time in their own minds, you got to know what that first taste of freedom feels like. Do you know? That's why if you just take that first step towards freedom and you feel that freedom for the first time in your life, something that you haven't felt for a really long time, wow, you and I know what that feels like. That is the most liberating, powerful feeling in the world.
Yes.
And I want people to know that they can experience, even if they've lived this way for so long and they have suffered so much, being imprisoned, not knowing there's any way out of the mental prison, that you can take that first step. You can make that first change with a thought that no longer serves you, and you will experience freedom for the first time, and it is going to be one of the most divine feelings you've ever known.
And that's what we're here for, people. We're here to help you free yourself from your own imprisoning thoughts that keep you locked up, that keep you stuck. You don't have to be stuck in that prison anymore. And as we continue these shows, we're going to help you find your way out.
Right.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. All it takes is just that one step. That's why it says who is such an important question, because you're stepping up. You're taking that step forward, and that's courageous of you to take that step forward and say, I am ready. I'm ready to look at this thought that has gripped me for so long, that has caused me pain and suffering, or not allowed me to feel the love that I deserve, be it from another human being or a dog. And I am ready to say that I will change this thought, which has become my belief, which has become my cause, and has become my result or an action in reality or whatever you want to call it. And I'm ready to make the change. I'm ready. You know, you got to be ready. And even if you're afraid, and even if you feel fear, you can take that step.
Right. You know, the word courage comes to mind as you say that. And I'm an old cowboy, and I'm a big John Wayne fan. And he said, courage is when you feel the fear and you saddle up anyway.
I love it.
So
yes.
Feel the fear. Feel whatever fear that comes up with you as you're approaching your freedom. Feel whatever fear that comes up, but saddle up and face it anyway.
Yes, I love that, Johnny. And what that brings to mind for me, and I think we could all share these stories, and boy, it's amazing what's in the memory there. I remember when I was a little girl, we went to a pool. There was a public pool next to my library in my neighborhood. And I must have been, I don't know, 7 years old, not more than 10. And there was the high dive. Do you remember those high dives? I mean, You see high dives when you see professional, you know, divers jump off. And I wanted to jump off that thing so badly, but it terrified me. I was petrified of it. And each day I inched my way up that ladder until one day I jumped off that thing. I felt like I was flying, and I never looked back. So you can take that step even when you're petrified and do what you say, saddle up, do what I did, jump off that diving board and never look back.
Yes. Or we have just a few more minutes here. I'm going to ask you to tell our listeners how they can find us on our website and submit questions if they have questions as a result of what they've heard. And then we'll try to answer those questions on our next show.
Says who for the addictivepersonality.com. They can go on there. They can write us in and give us their questions if they have. We are more than happy to share it with our audience. Please send in your questions. We want to hear from you. We want to know, what thoughts are you having? You know, what's going on with you that you and I, Johnny, can help people dismantle and to transform those negative thoughts that they're holding on to?
I love what we're doing, Aura. I love what we're doing. And I believe a lot of people are going to benefit from this. And I'm going to say thanks to our listeners. You can look for our other podcasts at morphintoanewyou.com, Mental Health News Radio Network. And we love what we're doing here. That's why we're doing it. And nobody's standing behind me with a basket full of cash. We're doing this because we love it. Hook up with us again next week.
Yes, look forward to it.